Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Ellie Bailey, and this is episode number 14, Criminals, Court Cases, and Cover-Ups. April 25th, 2014, Flint, Michigan. The beginning of one of the nation's most disastrous environmental catastrophes. A switch in Flint's water supply brought highly corrosive, untreated water through aging pipes. Muddy-colored, foul-tasting, and stinking water poured out of faucets and showerheads. As a result, Flint's people endured hair loss, skin rashes, vomiting, sickness, and disease. Up to 12,000 children were exposed to harmful quantities of lead, resulting in developmental delays and IQ loss. A Legionnaires' disease outbreak claimed 12 lives and sickened at least 87 more. Yet, the government's response was painfully slow and wholly inadequate. December 2020, Flint, Michigan. The crisis is ongoing. Fearing the long-term effects of chronic lead exposure, Flint residents still do not trust the water. Left feeling violated and betrayed by their government's failure to protect their right to clean water, many still seek accountability for those responsible for their pain. Yet, identifying a culprit for this environmental catastrophe is no easy feat. Considering the vast array of people and organizations involved, from the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality to the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services to officials in Flint, the difficulty of placing blame on a specific culprit cannot be understated. 15 current and former city and state officials were charged with crimes related to the crisis. The group included 5 MDEQ employees, 5 MDHHS employees, 2 emergency managers, and 3 employees of the city of Flint. Not only did those charged differ across occupation and seniority, but the charges themselves varied in type, from misconduct in office to involuntary manslaughter. Despite the harsh yet justifiable charges, 7 of those 15 cases were resolved with plea deals. In many cases, including those of former Flint Utilities Administrator Doherty Johnson and former MDEQ water quality analyst Adam Rosenthal, any remaining post-plea charges were dismissed because of their cooperation with prosecutors. In the end, only 1 out of 7 plea deals resulted in a conviction. Corinne Miller, former director of the Bureau of Disease Control, Prevention, and Epidemiology within the MDHHS, was accused of misconduct in office, conspiracy to commit misconduct in office, and willful neglect of duty. Lead prosecuting attorney Todd Flood spoke in Miller's preliminary hearing, exposing her indifference to the suffering of Flint's residents. Flood revealed that Miller was aware of the budding Legionnaires' disease epidemic as early as January of 2015. Yet, the epidemic progressed through 2015 without any acknowledgement. State officials reported 12 deaths among the 91 confirmed cases of Legionnaires' disease in Genesee County that year, a county that normally has 6 to 13 annual cases. Unable to ignore the tragedy any longer, Miller finally made a formal statement about the outbreak in January of 2016. Her announcement was too little, too late. Children fell ill, residents died, and families mourned. If only Miller had taken action at the first signs of poisonous water, the consequences would not have been so dire. Pleading no contest to the neglect of duty charge, Miller was sentenced to a year of probation, 300 hours of community service, and fined $1,200. Miller refused to testify beyond answering questions from the judge, and her attorney declined to comment after the hearing. Whether Miller was taking responsibility for her tragic missteps in court, or her no-contest plea was only to avoid harsh sentencing, is still a mystery. In a travesty of justice, the 8 remaining cases, several of which included the most egregious charges of involuntary manslaughter, were quietly dismissed. Corinne Miller stands alone as the only convicted criminal of the crisis. One of the dismissed cases includes Nick Lyon, director of the MDHHS. Lyon was the highest-ranked official prosecuted for the tragedy, charged with involuntary manslaughter and misconduct in office. The manslaughter charge relates to the deaths of 2 Flint men by Legionnaires' disease. The prosecution stated that Lyon willfully and neglectfully refused to protect the lives of these men by failing to act appropriately with regard to disseminating notices to the public. Lyon's case is very similar to Miller's in that Lyon's charges are largely based on ignorance and failure to act. Miller testified against Lyon to mitigate her own sentencing, stating that he had the ability to know how many Legionnaires' disease deaths there were in Flint, and has the power as the state's health chief to protect lives and enforce laws. Just like Miller, Lyon knew about the Legionnaires' outbreak as early as 2015. As claims of corruption and cries of angry citizens filled the courtroom, Lyon and his defense attorney, John Bursch, continued to deny responsibility. Bursch exploited the difficulty of proving probable cause, which is necessary for a case to progress to trial. Following Lyon's preliminary hearing, Bursch stated that, "You heard a lot of things today of things that went wrong. They're not all Director Lyon's fault. He is not vicariously liable for all 14,000 employees of the Department of Health and Human Services." Yet, a crime did occur that led to disastrous ramifications, while those with both power and knowledge escaped from responsibility or consequences through legal jargon. The charges against Lyon and the remaining seven defendants were abruptly dropped on June 13, 2019. Prosecutors claim that doing so gives them time to conduct a full and complete investigation. This course of action, in conjunction with Bursch's argument, reveals the difficulties of prosecuting environmental cases. Despite incriminating charges and seemingly sufficient evidence, there was never enough for a conviction. In an interview with Leanne Sullivan, visiting assistant professor of environmental studies at Colby College, she discussed the obstacles that environmental cases bring to court, stating,
"Simply that there's not really anything written into our legal statutes that talk about, you know, the right to a clean environment or the right to safety, right? And so a lot of the court cases that we saw coming out of Flint were just dropping off like flies."
Without explicit laws and regulations, it is difficult to prove that highly ranked, powerful individuals committed a crime, especially when they are not directly responsible. April 25th, 2020 marked the sixth anniversary of the Flint water crisis. Brandishing no new developments in the criminal cases, prosecutors are left with few options to proceed, since Michigan's statute of limitations for misconduct charges is 6 years. Thus, it appears that there will be no additional convictions resulting from the crisis, much to the chagrin of Flint residents who are seeking retribution. However, the April 25th hard deadline is not as rigid as it may seem. Prosecutors could still bring new charges to light. Additionally, while the country is in the midst of a global pandemic, prosecutors could request to extend the deadline. However, just as the government's initial response to the crisis was painfully slow, so are the legal proceedings. Struggling with the aftermath of such a discouraging legal process, Flint residents are left frustrated. In the words of Flint resident Melissa Mays, "This is not justice. The only thing it tells me is that our lives don't matter." Citizens left scarred by the crisis want justice. However, Flint residents need to address both monetary and symbolic value of continuing the legal battles. By June 13, 2019, the day the remaining eight charges were dropped, the state had spent more than $30.6 million on the prosecution and defense of state employees. Meanwhile, Flint residents are still suffering from poor water quality, continuing to rely on bottled water to drink and bathe. While the lack of restitution is unfortunate, Flint residents and government officials alike must acknowledge the mounting costs of continuing investigations. Many officials who were originally involved in the crisis have since been fired or resigned, so while still an option, further prosecution would be purely symbolic. Instead, it is worthwhile to consider a second option: abandoning the criminal investigations and rerouting any remaining legal funds towards the improvement of water quality. Both options are undeniably valuable, as Professor Sullivan states.
"Having those people held liable is still symbolically important, but doesn't necessarily provide benefit back to those communities, right, who actually need the sort of, you know, new structures and the sort of policies that protect them in the cases where stuff like this happens."
Unfortunately, the Flint water crisis is ongoing. Analysis and commentary can only go so far. Any additional investigations, criminal charges, prosecutions, and environmental resolutions are ultimately left to Flint residents, officials, and employees. Whether the city and state officials are held accountable for their actions is yet to be seen, but residents vow to continue fighting for their rights to clean water. In the meantime, The rest of the world should take note of this travesty, as it is a glaring injustice to the environment, water, and the people of Flint. This has been episode 14 of the Science of Crime podcast, Criminals, Court Cases, and Cover-Ups. Thank you for listening, and stick around for more on Flint.